Let me introduce you to everybody. So Simon started out as an actuarial student and then decided to kind of go, I guess, on the scenic route, and sort of in the intervening period went and did an MSc in statistics, and subsequently saw the light and came back to an actuarial qualification. But by then was so enamored with the banking world that he felt quite hard to leave it for traditional actuarial roles. He heads up the independent validation unit at APSA, and he's passionate about model risk in general and the changes in model risk management that are required with the technological advances that are coming in with artificial intelligence, automation, and greater data availability. So we look forward to hearing what you've got to share with us. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Right. Hi, everyone. Just a little disclaimer first. I'm a bit sick, so if I'm making funny noises while I'm doing the presentation, please give me some slack. And the second one, I'm not really used to presenting, particularly to such an eclectic group of people. If you just bear with me. All right, model risk. So we kind of spoke about it, or we've heard about it just now. Just on a kind of general basis, model risk would relate primarily to how good a model is at presenting whatever real-world phenomenon you're trying to model. And it being a simplification of the real-world phenomenon, obviously there's some kind of a deficiency. Now, fortunately, in our statistical models and within the theoretical frameworks, we've got ways of figuring that out. And then, of course, there is the operational considerations, such as whether the correct model is implemented, whether it's used correctly, and by that would mean in a particular scope of for specific purposes. So that's generally, and of course, when whether it remains to be appropriate under changing conditions. Definition I've given here is fairly generic, and I think you would have seen this in the majority of in a lot of the papers. Right. In terms of just established model risk controls, we in banking have started work on model risk quite a while ago, probably with the advent of Basel II and the implementation of the foundation and advanced internal rating-based approaches, where a validation team is a regulatory requirement. So the bulk of the banks initially looked at only regulatory capital models. Then it was extended to impairment models because, I suppose, of a reputational risk and the risk in terms of engagement with the auditors. And where we are in EPSA Group is we now, all of our models are basically in scope of validation and in scope of the general kind of model risk, model life cycle and the controls that sits within that life cycle. So, just in terms of what we would want to see in terms of established model risk controls, governance requirements, policies, processes, that needs to be articulated, documented, standardized, approved, and that would ensure sort of consistency and common understanding throughout the organization. Model risk appetite definition and monitoring, so specifically how or what incidences or what quantities of model risk the organization finds acceptable and not acceptable. Model inventory, that's been covered in the previous presentation, model ownership. So somebody's got to own the model. If kind of model development owns the model, but it's used in business, then immediately the owner is not accountable for the users of the model and for parts of that model risk definition. So one needs to consider quite carefully who should own the model. Pre-development design objectives in view of the intended purpose and scope. So in the context of this presentation, purpose is what the model will be used for. Scope is on what populations it will be used for. It will be used. And that needs to be articulated before we start the development of the model. Data quality completeness representativeness, and specifically representativeness in relation to the model scope. So if it's going to be used on a particular portfolio, we would want to note that whatever data is used to develop or test the model is consistent to that particular portfolio. Methodology selection. So that applies both to the structure of the model and the parameterization thereof, or methodology employed in parameterizing the model. Quality and completeness of model documentation. As actuaries, I'll need to explain to you how painful that can be. Acceptability of model assumptions and limitations in view of the intended purpose and scope. Again, that's something that we're all quite familiar with. Assessment of model performance on an out-of-sample and out-of-time basis. That is at development. It's kind of useless for us to know that the model performs on the sample in which it was developed. It's a bit of a tautology. But we would want to know that the performance of the model is generalizable to out-of-sample and out-of-time data. Then independent validation, pre-implementation, and then periodically thereafter. The period and the extent of validation can certainly vary depending on whatever criteria you want to look at. Initial approval and periodic reapproval of the model, so like reaffirmation that the model remains fit for purpose and we can continue to use the model. Assurance of correct implementation, pre- and post-implementation, which typically requires pre-implementation testing, post-implementation testing. Periodic model performance and use monitoring, so ensuring that the model is used for what it was built for and on the population for which it was built, as well as regular model performance as an early warning trigger when the model stops performing and then we either need to step in and do something about it or go the contingency route. And then, of course, audit assurance as a third line of defense, whether they review the processes or the controls within the process or whatever the case may be. Okay. So that's kind of traditionally what we do. Now, machine learning. I just wanted to go back. And we do believe that model risk is going to become progressively more topical. What we see in banking is, first of all, the South African Reserve Bank, or the Prudential Authority as they're now known, has requested the banks to come up with a methodology to quantify model risk as part of their economic capital. And it's no longer a discussion of conservatism on regulatory capital models or margins of conservatism. It is now some form of methodology to actually quantify model risk. The second one is with the, whatever they call it, Basel 3.5 or Basel 4 standard coming in 2022, for a lot of the low default portfolios where we don't have reliable data and we don't have a sufficient number of defaults to empirically to have empirically robust model estimates, the advanced internal rating-based approach and possibly foundation internal rating-based approach will be disallowed in favor of the standardized approaches. So the regulators do seem to be concerned about the quantum of model risk specifically in those type of portfolios. Machine learning. So it's a field of computer science where algorithms improve their performance at certain tasks as more data is observed. What is attempted to do is to generalize beyond the data in the training set. And primarily, machine learning algorithms or systems thrive on data. The more data they have, the more granular they have, they can become. And I think it sort of came out of the amount of data that has become possible to store, and not necessarily sort of applicable data. It could be similar and related data, such as behavior on online forums or Facebook or WhatsApp that somehow sort of predicts whatever real-world phenomenon you're trying to model. Machine learning is motivated by pattern recognition and focuses solely on predictive accuracy of the system. No inference or assumptions are made about the underlying mechanism. So it's purely a data process. Yes, there may be some assumptions made in the selection of the algorithm, as we'll see later. But primarily, it's an exploratory data process, and on the basis of that data process, we answer a particular purpose of the model. Now, a good way, and I've seen the graph, I just couldn't find it for this presentation, kind of a good way to distinguish between a statistical model is a machine learning model. If you think about a two-dimensional space, a statistical model would be like a line. It sort of cuts between good and bad exposures, for example. A machine learning model would be like a set of contours where there are specific groups of good quality exposures identified within the two-dimensional space. Right. So since data is probably the most important element of machine learning, we'll cover that first. Machine learning cannot deal with poor and reliable or biased data. Okay. In some cases, and probably outliers is a good example of that, with statistical models, there are specific techniques which you can deal with the outliers. Even if some of the data is not necessarily accurate, because the parameterization methods and techniques are well established, potentially it shouldn't have a material impact on your final model. With machine learning there, if you have pockets of incorrect data, then the decision-making will be completely wrong within that space. Collection, storage, and security of data must be compliant to relevant regulations and internal policies. That's kind of self-explanatory, and in view of the POPIA Act, I think what we've seen, particularly with the tech companies, is that they collect and store absolutely everything and hope that at some point in the future they might use it for whatever purpose. I'm not sure if that's kind of going to be foreseeable going into the future or possible going into the future. The raw data may not be in a form amenable to training. And typically, and we do this in stats as well, I suppose, a process termed feature engineering is undertaken where a set of synthetic variables are created which are more geared towards a training of a machine learning system. However, the process itself can create errors or bias in the data. Also, the data may become uninterpretable in terms of the feature engineering process. So you no longer can interpret what the particular variable means. And depending on the requirement for the explainability of your outcomes, so I'm not a statistical specialist, but I'd imagine you'd want to be able to explain to a client how you rate. I'm not an insurance specialist. How you calculate a premium on the basis of which factors, that may not be an acceptable outcome. Training becomes exponentially harder as the dimensionality, number of features of the data set grows. So that kind of sounds counterintuitive almost at first. But if you think about having, 500 variables, a lot of which may not be predictive for whatever you're trying to predict, and only a finite number of observations, then how do you identify and select the really significant variables? I've spoken about the outliers earlier, so machine learning systems may see outliers as a valid pattern and base the decision-making on that, whereas in statistical system, outliers are almost automatically mitigated because your distribution is structured in a certain way. And yes, you can deal with outliers through proper data cleaning or review. But again, something that probably will affect machine learning systems more than statistical models. Then there's a problem of data leakage. And then any training of a system on a biased or non-random data set will result in a poor generalizability of the system. Okay. The second component is really the algorithms. they used. And there is sort of the number of algorithms is increasing almost daily. There's a variety of them. Each one has a distinct set of advantages and disadvantages. The use of a particular algorithm for a particular purpose becomes quite an important feature to consider. A lot of the times in our space, certainly, we talk about challenger models, we use the same data sets, so we use the same information, but we build a different model, and then we see whether it performs better than the model built by the development teams. That gets complicated in the space because of computational requirements and how many challenger algorithms are you going to run for a particular application? And just running one algorithm may not ensure the optimality of the system. So there is a trade-off between technical requirements in terms of how many concurrent models do you want to build versus the cost of the hardware, basically. A lot of algorithmic approaches are black boxes. So you basically, potentially through the feature engineering, you end up with uninterpretable... rich drivers or variables. And then the algorithm being a black box, then you can't really explain how the risk drivers affect the final outcome. So that could be quite a serious thing for certain types of models. Human bias, in terms of algorithmic selections, most machine learning coders or developers would specialize in certain types of algorithms. They may not be appropriate for a particular application, but they would be biased towards using something that they know and something that they can train data on quite well. And that can create a bias in the selection of algorithm. Overfitting is a serious problem in machine learning because the system can really, really, on the in-sample basis, can become exceptionally accurate. What you would like to see is that the system on an out-of-sample basis performs just as well or almost as well. And then there's a problem of multiple testing. How many statistical tests are you going to do? Or how many performance testing are you going to do? And how do you sort of identify whether they're significant or not? Okay, just in terms of general recommendations or general concerns. So machine learning can assess whether a specific objective is being met, but not whether this is through morally acceptable means. So if we feed data that's race data, gender data, which potentially we're not allowed to use for certain applications, machine learning systems will incorporate that data if it is predictive. So we need to be quite aware of what we can and cannot put into that black box. Machine learning system may see counterintuitive patterns in a set of data, a pattern in a random set of data. So that's kind of a... So even if you select a random data set, there will be some patterns within it. And machine learning systems will zero in on those, irrespective of the fact that the data came from a random distribution. So kind of performance testing... Not just on an in-sample basis, but on an out-of-sample and out-of-time basis becomes really, really critical. Machine learning cannot view something as a cause or distinguish between cause or correlation, obviously. So they'll identify certain variables that drive the outcome or drive the prediction that you want to obtain. But whether it makes sense that these variables actually affect the prediction or not, and whether it... You know, it's just a concurrent relationship or intrinsic relationship between the outcome and a particular variable, or indeed the variable is a precursor or predictor of an outcome, the system will not be able to differentiate. So I've kind of spoken a bit about out of sample, out of time, but this is more around, say, a change in the... And that's probably applicable to all the models, but... A change in economic environment or a change in population of applicants, whatever external change can happen, machine learning system may not work on the new population because it was trained on a specific population. A lot of the times, I think we, certainly in our space, we want to see some form of monotonic relationship between between a variable or a predictor and the outcome. So an example of this would be profit margin versus profit margin versus the ranking of business exposures. We would like to see that as profit margin increases, the likelihood of default decreases. Machine learning will not necessarily give you that because it considers tens or hundreds of thousands of variables in combination. And when you kind of start analyzing the relationship between the outcome and any given variable, the trend may become very counterintuitive. So you may have a pattern where as the profit margin increases, your for some segments of the population or some sectors, probability of default will also increase. And that's explicitly kind of guided against in statistical models because the structures generally or the methodology, whatever you want to call it, is pretty hard-coded. So if, in terms of the formula that the model uses, there is prescribed relationship between the outcome and the variables that fit into it. They're not self-replicating or self-optimizing. I suppose that's true for current models as well, but because machine learning have potential to be evolving quite quickly or change quite quickly, we may end up in a situation where we accumulate quite a lot of technical debt. So that environment and the process and the system need to be cleaned up quite frequently. We need contingency plans to minimize business disruption. I suppose that's equally true with kind of statistical models, but because machine learning can be quite an opaque environment, and you know, even if we identify that the model is underperforming, we may not be able to explain why it is underperforming. With a statistical model, we typically can zero in on where the problem is and then just try and correct it for the particular problem. Performance monitoring becomes much more important and at much greater frequency than the statistical model, particularly if the model gets updated quite continuously. So that may require additional technology and additional methodologies for monitoring of model performance. The more uncertain or rapid changing the environment in which the system is expected to operate, or the longer the feedback loop from the monitoring, the more generalized the solution should be. So we may want to trade off the performance or the ranking ability of the system for generalizability, so that even if so that the system continues to perform even with reasonable changes in environment or population. Just one thing I want to mention before we go on to the next page. There is this new kind of generation of machine learnings which are based on neural networks and which are completely self-learning. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. We haven't really applied ourselves as yet to how you control model risk within that space. Because if that system learns in a real-time environment, so the concept of out-of-sample testing, the concepts of and kind of ability to put it into a structured governance process becomes very complicated. I do not expect that we in banks and possibly you in insurance are going to use that anytime soon, but I think at some point we're going to have to look at this in more detail. So this, what I'm talking about here is, it's machine learning environments, but really they're kind of the same as a normal model. So it'll stay static for a period of time, then it'll be updated, then it'll stay static for a period of time, that'll be updated. If you've got a real-time evolving model, as more data comes in, I think the governance and the assurance will become much more complicated. Let me just go back to the original kind of the model risk controls, and where I think we have to focus on the machine learning models. Obviously, the design objectives must be much more carefully articulated, because the selection of data sets, whether you do feature engineering or not, whether you select particular algorithms or certain algorithms are not appropriate, whether you want certain relationships between the predict and response variables, all of that needs to be specified explicitly within the pre-development design objectives. We call it terms of reference, but I mean, what's in the name, right? Data quality, completeness, and representativeness becomes a really important issue, particularly if the organization collects all the data possible from all the sources possible, and therefore potentially cannot ensure the quality of the data or completeness of the data. So, and of course, if the data is rubbish, just like with statistical model, the output is going to be rubbish. But it will be more affected here, because not only will it change the parameters of the model, it will also potentially change the form of the model. Methodology selection becomes quite critical. So which algorithms do you use? Do you run multiple algorithms in parallel? Do these algorithms, or does the final product have to comply with certain criteria like monotonicity or explainability, things like that? Assessment of model performance on an out-of-sample and time basis. So you'd need to do that at inception, so when the model is built, and then on a continuous the monitoring thereafter. And I kind of mentioned the difficulties with, well, not difficulties, but I think the enhancements that we will have to put in terms of real-time monitoring and much shorter feedback loop between the monitoring results and then kind of deciding whether any adjustments need to be made to the model. And then, yeah, and that sort of covers periodic model performance and monitoring. So what may also be a concern here is how frequently the models get updated as well. So typically, I'm not sure in your space, in our space, we would typically update the models no more frequently than once a year in terms of methodology and structure and core parameterization. We may have some kind of refreshes or alignments that come through, and that methodology is approved as part of the approval of the model methodology. But in this space, we're looking at and discussions we've had with our guys, they would want to update this and kind of refit it and retrain it every 3 months or every 2 months, because once the code is done and the data kind of feeds automatically, it becomes very easy to just rerun the thing. But then how does your approval cycle work in such a situation? Do you then start approving every 2 months? Where does your independent validation fit in such a situation? And potentially, where does your monitoring fit? Do you have to then recode your monitoring every 2 months as well? So that's about it. I don't know if you want to ask any questions.
Hi, thank you very much for the talk. I've got a quick question. With the continuous advances in how much data we can collect and the improvements in processing power, and there's a lot of active research in the area of machine learning. Would you say that it's possible that the machine learning-based approaches will completely overtake the statistical parametric approaches in the future, or will there always be room for both? Or maybe just comment on how you feel about that.
I think there'll always be room for both. And I think it goes to the heart of that issue of explainability or a sort of desired relationship between the predictors and the outcome. So the relationship that you obtain from machine learning systems may be quite random because it identifies pockets. It doesn't really try and build trends or identify certain trends. And so far, the users we've seen was primarily in fraud detection, which kind of works quite well. But the worst thing that can happen there is if you detect fraud and it wasn't fraud, well, that's cool. And potentially, and we've seen users in customer outreach or customer sale programs where we identify specific customers that we would like to contact for a particular product. Again, the kind of the downside of this thing breaking down is fairly low. I would think that, and again, I'm speaking from a kind of bank perspective, I would think that if we wanted to do a pricing model on the basis of machine learning, potentially it would not be very popular because we would want certain factors to affect the final price in a certain way. So there's a fair amount of a theoretical kind of or structured relationships that you want to incorporate in there. And you want to be able to explain on what basis you came up with a certain price. So I really do believe that the need for explainability and the need for certain structures or relationships within the model will mean that we will still use traditional statistical models going forward. What I think will change is probably the amount of time we spend building models versus governing model risk. And my belief is that building models will become progressively easier and automated going forward. Not for all applications, but for certain specific applications. What we're looking at is regulatory capital models, impairment models, which are fairly structured, and you know what you want to get. But the governance around it will become more complex. And yeah, potentially if you're running a machine learning system, you may want a sort of a machine learning validation system to run in parallel. And it might be the only solution that will actually work going forward.
Okay, if there are no more questions, I think that we'll move on to the next topic. Simon, thanks very much. Thanks for sharing all your experience and learning with us. That's great.